For November the 7th, 2014, we talk about Grand Theft Auto V's first-person mode, Murasaki Baby, and we read your game binge confessions. Welcome to the 82nd Level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Mindsmith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Hey, guys, how's it going?
It's going good.
Pretty okay.
Oh, cool, cool. I'm irritated. can I get out here and say this thing?
Get a sure. Rant in. What
okay.
Do you got?
Okay, I'm gonna fit this one in edgewise, all right? So I've got a Windows machine. That's a PC. That
I think I've identified your problem right there.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, so it's sitting next to me now, but normally it sits next to my living room, television for me to play Steam games on, and that's all that it does. And apparently it is so riddled with spyware that it doesn't function.
Ooh.
Yeah, so I'm trying to figure out what the fuck that's to do with. I'm really upset because I need to be playing Morrowind for Watch Out for Fireballs. And, being that I am incredibly busy, I generally only have an hour to sit down and play. And what happens is I sit down, I run a scan for 20 minutes because it, doesn't want to open anything up. And then I get it in there and then I, make about 15 minutes progress. Not long enough to want to save it, and then something comes in and kills the process, and ooh. All of a sudden I'm out. So I've made no progress because apparently just having a Windows machine that's turned on and sitting somewhere means that it will be just riddled with spyware.
Is this confirmation that McAfee is a protection racket?
Maybe. Let's ask that guy who's out of his mind on bath salts in Belize. Although he has nothing to do with the company, I just think he's going to have some good ideas. Nothing to do with the company anymore.
You gotta respect that guy for how far he got.
Wait, so you got popped on murder charges, right?
He eventually.
Okay, cool.
It's the eventually part that's impressive.
Yeah. Oh man. So yeah, that's my rant. If anybody can help me out, I've used all of all of my old programs that I used to use are now spyware in and of themselves. I've taken some suggestions from listeners about how to deal with this. I'm using Malwarebytes, I'm using Microsoft Security's Essentials, I'm using Windows Defender, and every time I run it, it pulls back a bunch of stuff, but it doesn't make the thing fucking run.
Have you considered wiping the hard drive and reinstalling?
Well, I would, except it's goddamn ridiculous to have to do that 7 months after you build the fucking thing.
Yeah.
I'm not angry at you, David. It is a perfectly valid thing. I just don't want to have to spend a weekend doing that.
Is this Windows 7?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, that's the good one. Yeah.
I know, right? Yeah, that is the Paul McCartney of Windows operating systems. Yeah, it's just sorry. I just wanted to get that out. If anybody has any tips, and don't be like, oh, don't be downloading something, literally nothing. Literally just using it for Netflix and for Steam games.
Mm-hmm. So which Beatle then is Windows 8?
Windows 8 is George Harrison. It seems like it's trying a bunch of crazy new stuff, but there might not be as much substance to it as people think.
Zing. Take
we
that,
all know
George
that
Harrison.
Is Ringo, right?
No, Vista's Ringo.
Ah.
Yeah. Yep. And Lennon, I think, is XP because he, he had kind of the longest lasting thing outside of Paul, Lennon left the biggest impression, right? So, yeah. So yeah, that is just my general call for everybody. Please, please help. I just want to play Morrowind in peace.
If you are a virus, I will pay anything. Get off of my computer.
Yeah.
Well, that's how the internet works, right?
I guess, yeah. Oh, God, it's the worst.
See, I thought you were going to say that you were frustrated because you wanted to know and settle our debate from last week.
Oh, well, couple weeks ago, right? This is the Smash Brothers versus Smash Bros, right?
Yeah, 2 weeks ago, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, you put out a poll on the Facebook group.
Yeah, and people showed up in force. So we had 41 people in total chime in, which is awesome. And so the debate was whether or not when you actually say the game's title, do you say Super Smash Brothers or Super Smash Bros? With assertions on both sides that it was clearly the right choice. So
assertions on both sides within the show.
Within the show and abroad. So I first want to hear your guys' guesses on where things shook out, and then I'll give you the real results.
I'm outnumbered on the show, so I'm going to imagine that I'm outnumbered, but not by as much as you would think.
Okay.
Not by a very wide margin.
In favor of Brothers?
No, in favor of Bros.
Gotcha. Okay.
I'm going to say 3/5 Brothers, 2/5 Bros.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Ben on this. 3/5 wrong and 2/5 correct.
why are we all guessing in counter to our... Like, I know why I'm doing it, because I'm an insecure mess. But why are you guys doing it?
Same reason.
Okay, cool.
Well, actually, it's even worse than that. It was 2/3 wrong, a.k.a. Brothers,
okay,
and 1/3 Bros.
Whoa.
Almost exactly.
Yeah, so that's not a rounding error. That's not a margin...
No, okay. it was almost double the people say Brothers, but I do want to point out that it was raised in the comments that whether or not you say Super at the beginning has an effect, because I don't know how many people just say Smash Bros. I can't even say it. Smash Brothers versus Smash Bros. Want to play some Smash Bros?
Yeah. Yo, dog, you want to hop up on some SB? I got my GCN down here. We're going to hop up on the NET, by which I mean the network, to play against people on WII. What?
What was that? Do you guys remember that skit on To Catch a Bro?
What?
I have not heard this.
No. This sounds terrible. Go ahead.
No, I'll find it. Everyone listening knows what I'm talking about. I'm confident. But they, you know, bringing over GameCubes in their backpack. And huge black dildos.
Oh.
Okay.
I have seen this. Yes.
Okay.
We should... Yeah.
Huh. Okay. Yeah, so I don't know. Should we issue a sequel to the poll? Should we say, okay, like, give all four variants, all right? So, Smash Brothers, Super Smash Brothers, Smash Bros, and Super Smash Bros.
I love the disdain.
Well, I just can't get it out because it's like not a thing people say. So yeah.
I have to be honest, I'm actually really surprised that there was anyone who agreed with me on this. I assume this was just like some crazy thing I said. And that, you know, actually educated people said Brothers. But I'm glad to know that I am not alone.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's very, very life affirming.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll have to follow it up with maybe kind of breaking it out that way. And then also there was another debate last week over whether or not you're honest about your age when it's requested.
Yeah.
So I would love to see how much, well, either in the majority or minority. I don't want to influence results, but see the breakout for that.
Is that, I mean, that's just like a binary thing, right? Like, do you put your actual age in or no?
What if you put like the actual year but not the actual month and day?
Oh.
Ooh.
Shades of gray, bro.
See, this is all important.
Yeah, we have to. I mean, like, it's important that these surveys be designed, you know, very well. I think also the earliest possible one and also the latest possible one. Like, does somebody put out the effort to do like, you know, 1/1/1901 versus, you know?
I think what we need to do is a blind study. Maybe just, you know, get some data from the field about what people are entering and.
Okay.
Am I the only one? Did I reference this last week? It bothers me that, like, some of them, the earliest you can go is, like, say, like, 1930.
Yeah, you
reference
this.
Like, just the logic of, you know, with however many billion, trillion people in the world, there's got to be at least, like, one 110-year-old who's, you know, on Steam and can never put in their actual date.
Yeah, it's the game and grandma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So look for more of those. Apparently people like it, or at least felt like they would respond to it.
Yeah. Okay. So the age one should just be a date selection, you know, like a birthday selection, like, okay, what's your birthday? And then three pages blank, and then no, really, what's your birthday? And then we calculate the difference.
Or it's, are you honest when you enter your birthday online? And if you select no, it goes to a page that just says, how can I trust that you're answering this one accurately then?
I think we're going to have to get, like, use the pro features of the surveys platform that you're using.
Wait, Dad, so you're going to turn this into like Princess Bride? But I knew you'd lie about lying about your age.
That's right.
We have a long show to get through, so I wanted to make sure that we got all of that off of our chest so we could enter into the world of the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind unencumbered.
Yeah, we can start a new argument afresh.
Yes. It is time for the brief, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games. I'm going to get us started with one that will probably be real short, although knowing us, not likely. So Grand Theft Auto 5 is getting a re-release on PS4, Xbox One, and PC. Happens every time, David. Happens every time. It's weird. Some of the spyware on my Windows machine shows me what you're doing.
I'm that level of infected.
Yeah.
No one wants to see that.
Yeah. So, in addition to some additional content and also, graphics and whatnot, this is also bringing in a first-person mode for Grand Theft Auto 5, which also is bringing in a new cover system, new targeting system, and a more traditional first-person shooter control scheme, right? And with the ability to toggle back and forth between these modes, right? So taking this from being kind of like a third-person exploration game to what might arguably be considered like an immersive city simulator, even more so than it already is, right? Like, oh, it's bringing you down to scale.
I don't know. It just seems like, unless they're really going to knock it out of the park, like, that's not what the people are there playing for. Like, they've got their Call of Duties and such for good first-person mechanics. It seems like it's taken a really good open-world game and turning it into a mediocre first-person shooter.
Optionally.
Yeah, but who would subject themselves to that?
Somebody who really wanted to see that city from ground level. I mean, like, honestly, like, if I'm speaking about that to myself, that, and also I really like in cockpit mode in cars.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
Yeah, so that's a pretty big deal to me. David, you were saying something.
Well, I feel like at least potentially the counterpoint to that, well, the two. One is, it does seem like they're making some references to changing up the control scheme, because I think if they just straight up, you know, it's third-person mode except from first-person, that would be horrible. But I think the other thing is, there's actually not that many truly open-world sandbox first-person shooters. I mean, the only ones I could think of were like the Far Cry series and Stalker. Right. I'm sure there are others, but...
Elder Scrolls?
Well, good ones and shooter.
Boom, shut down.
No, truly, yeah, Elder Scrolls is definitely a popular and successful first person. I'm meaning more like straight up shooting focused ones.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's weird. I don't associate Grand Theft Auto with being a shooting focused game.
Well,
I feel like it's the bigger problem of having missions where you have to drive and shoot at the same time. They should just have those out, and that would be a much bigger fix to the game.
Yeah.
I would say that Grand Theft Auto is a shooting focused game. It's just not an aiming focused game.
Okay.
Yeah, actually, I was wondering about that. You know, the last Grand Theft Auto game I played significantly was San Andreas, and in that game, auto aim was pretty significant. Although I know, like in Saints Row, there's not a lot of auto aim. You mostly are just straight up aiming. Have they moved away from kind of the San Andreas like snap? You know, snap to headshot mode?
Yeah.
So I guess that would help.
Yep. They've made it, like, ever since 4, they've made it more focused on, actual aiming, like, third-person shooter kind of style. That's right, third-person? Is that the right way to say that?
Third person shooter.
Third person shooter, like over the shoulder.
What would a second person shooter look like?
you are shooting this person. You are pulling the trigger.
End war.
You are pulling this trigger. You are pulling this trigger. Run, run.
It's just a video of someone telling you what you're doing.
It's called Twitch.
Yeah.
I did like the mechanic in the Grand Theft Auto. I know it was in San Andreas, and I think it was in the fourth or the fifth one, where the better you get with a gun, the more you start aiming for the head of a person naturally when you snap to them.
Yeah.
Like your gun skill going up.
Yeah, that was definitely in San Andreas, although once you got dual wielding, it would stop doing that, and that really, really annoyed me.
Yeah. Hmm. I wish more stuff would use the shooting system from Red Dead Redemption, actually.
What do you mean?
Kind of like the smart lock-on, where you would lock on to somebody and could slice body parts out of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was this, do you mean like their like bullet time system, or was that the way it was all the time?
I mean, you had the focus, like, you know, the Red Dead Eye or whatever it was.
But. Right. Yeah, that was cool.
And you can, like, paint where you're going to shoot on people.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was pretty neat. I don't know. We also didn't talk about this, but although the Xbox One and PS4 versions of the game are coming out here in a couple weeks, the PC version has been delayed into 2015.
Ooh.
So, womp womp.
Also, another story. This is not my story, but something that might be relevant is the Black Friday. They've already announced a Black Friday sale for it, and it's I think $79 with The Last of Us for PS4.
Hmm.
I believe
it's a good deal.
Yeah,
get a PS4 with two great games that you could have bought for much cheaper on an older system.
Well, I think it's for both. I would have to double check that.
I suppose, but I mean,
cross buy.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Huh. Neat.
Yeah, I'm really hoping there's a Black Friday sale that's good enough for me to justify getting a PlayStation 4 to myself.
Yeah, I'm going to end up getting one. Oh, well. Let's see here. Who wants to do another story? I'm going to volunteer you, Ben.
All right. Yeah. So my story is about Dragon Age Inquisition.
I'm listening.
And so this story is kind of similar to the story we had last week about the early release of Call of Duty, which came out 2 days ago for us, 5 days ago for the listener. But so something similar is happening with Dragon Age Inquisition. There's a thing which I did not know about until today called EA Access on the Xbox One. Have you guys heard of this?
Yeah, we did a story about it a little while ago, but it was mostly criticizing it for being really, really worthless.
Yeah. So I guess their attempt to not make it as worthless, one of the things they're doing is they're going to have early access to the game, Dragon Age Inquisition, for players who have this.
Hmm.
And so it will be available 5 days ahead of time. However, the player will only get to play for 6 hours of time.
Yeah.
So they can kind of create their character, kind of get a taste for the world, but then that's it.
And does their save stick around? Do you know?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So
that's the dumbest thing. Like, the people who'd be interested in getting that game early do not want to just play it for 6 hours over 5 days.
It does seem a little bit counterintuitive, right? Like, oh, early access for a couple hours. Yeah.
I can kind of see some of the value in getting this, you know, getting those 6 hours in. You know, that's a little bit better than nothing. I don't know if I would pay $50 a year for that privilege or whatever it is. But 6 hours is a pretty hefty chunk of time, especially when you're talking about what is probably going to be like a 40-hour game, you know?
Yeah. And so apparently, too, the monthly fee is $5 a month, or you can get $30 a year. Not encouraging anyone necessarily to do that, but I just wanted to say what the price was.
Yeah.
But yeah, I could see that point. So yeah, I guess it depends on the preference of the player.
Yeah, I mean, they're not catering to somebody who's going to binge it. But if they gave them any more, then there are probably a lot of people who would actually, like, I'm going to play this all 24 hours and get halfway through and then hop on a message board and tell people that this isn't worth it. You know?
Yep.
Although I guess they've already bought it, so.
Is this, I kind of dropped off, is this a early access thing?
Yep.
Yeah.
So I guess I don't fully understand on some of these if it's available so much earlier, wherever, why don't they simply release it?
Well, this is only available for 6 hours of play.
So, I mean, is the implication that after that point the game's like not ready? I feel like if it's available for 6 hours of play, the game's probably done.
Well, because it's like a week before the game is like set to launch.
So I guess I don't understand. Why don't they just release it a week early and like stop with the middleman?
I mean, it's not so much a middleman as it is it's important for them to have a launch date so that they can, you know, like market it and get people excited and get people hyped up and get it out to stores and stuff. Right?
Yeah. So this would be like the hype factor, provided that it's a good game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Provided it's a good game. Also, like, you know, releasing it early, like, now that they have the capability to do that via, you know, via digital distribution like that, they can actually use that early release to create value, you know, behind this thing that they can sell. So, I mean, I'm not saying, yes, it will make them money or whatever, but like there's also a reason, you know, they can make money. That doesn't necessarily make it a good thing. But, I mean, that's an explanation as to why. I rambled around that, and I'm very, very sorry.
you should be.
Yeah, oh, well, yeah. So, I mean, that's the answer to your question. Why don't they release it early to everybody, like, immediately when it's, you know, when it's reached Gold Master or whatever? Like, well, no, they're going to have a release date except for this thing where they can get some money out of people to play it early.
How about, is anyone on the show planning on getting it and getting it early?
I mean, I'm planning on getting it. I don't have a Xbox One, so I can't really, you know, do this.
Is this an Xbox exclusive? Or, no. This is coming out for PS4 as well. So and PC.
Yeah, it's just the early release thing that is on the early access. Yeah.
Honestly, not to be snarky, I never understood what made Dragon Age special. It seemed like generic fantasy game number, you know, 367.
It's a little bit more complicated than that. However, I will say, yes, it is a little bit too Tolkien inspired. But mechanically and system wise, it is, you know, people regard it really highly because it is a successor in a lot of ways to Baldur's Gate.
It also seems very similar in style to Knights of the Old Republic as far as like the fighting system and the map system and just basically running around the world.
Yep. Yeah.
Sure. So I think that makes sense.
Dennis, you got a story?
Yeah, and I think I'm the last one since David had yours. Mine is that those E.T. Atari cartridges that they dug up from the landfill have started to sell on eBay. And they're going for upward of $405, which is incredibly low for what I was expecting.
Well, I was going to say incredibly high. People forgot what the gameplay was like.
Sure, but just like, I don't know. I went and looked up a list of you know, the rarest Atari cartridges. And, you know, it starts up in like the $20,000 to $50,000 range.
Can you name a title on what those might be?
Yeah, I'll just E.T. wound up is in like 30th place or so. Gamma Attack. There's only one known in existence. Hmm. Birthday Mania.
I've heard about that
Raid.
One.
Yeah, Air Raid. Atlantis 2. Red Sea Electric Crossing. Gauntlet. Karate Ultravision release. What else? Superman. Pepsi Invaders, which I'm guessing was like a promotional thing. Music Machine, Eli's Ladder, which was an educational game. River Patrol, and Cuba Color, which the only picture they have of the cartridge does not have like a label on it. It's like written on in pen, it's
like a white label kind of thing.
Yeah. Huh.
And someone is simply insisting that's what the game is.
And then something, the last one before you get into the range of that $400 that E.T. is going for is Mangia or Mangia, mm-hmm, with an apostrophe at the end. And it's a game about eating plates of pasta that your mother is constantly making or throwing them to your pets. If you eat too much pasta, your stomach explodes. But if you don't get rid of the plates quick enough, your table collapses. And those things are equally bad, apparently.
Man, games
or
used
you
to
disappoint
be...
your mother.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just like...
So I feel like if I was like a billionaire, I kind of would have the urge to simply buy up a bunch of these E.T. games and then flood the GameStop market with them.
All over again?
Yeah.
This history repeats itself.
Simply try to resell them to GameStop. Like, yeah. I don't know, the next time the next big game comes out, you know, like the next Call of Duty, simply go in there and be like, oh, I would like to trade in 200 copies of E.T. for Call of Duty.
Yeah, they wouldn't take that, though. They don't take anything older than Xbox 360.
Do not crush my dreams.
Like, I will buy it from you.
Yeah.
So they don't take retro video games?
No, they don't. And they're going to stop taking 360 here pretty soon, too.
Oh.
Yeah. So I think that's the reason why it's not really, really high in price, is because its rarity, like, you know, in this story, was the result of a glut of them in the market anyway. So not all of them were taken and put in that landfill. And in general, the secondary market doesn't really care where a game was. Like, it doesn't matter of like, ooh, this is a copy of, you know, Karateka that was in the room where Hitler actually died in Argentina in 1986. You know, like it's like people really don't care about that so much. Like, yes, it's an interesting story, but really what you're paying for is the story and not the game, right? Yeah. Whereas stuff that actually is, you know, supply constrained, you know, like Pepsi Invaders or whatever that is, you know, actually does kind of retain its value. Dennis, you were saying something before David cut in. Was there something you were hitting?
Nothing important that I can remember.
Okay.
To be fair, Cole, if you actually did have Hitler's copy of Arateka, I think I could probably sell it on the same message boards that sell Song of the South.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like there's always going to be a stormfront market for stuff in the room where Hitler died, so...
It seems like E.T. to video games is what the Star Wars holiday Christmas special is to the Star Wars universe.
Yeah.
It's just like...
Or Super Hornio Brothers for the video game-related pornography market.
Oh, no.
It's a thing.
I believe you, but I'm disappointed in the world.
Oh, man.
Dang it, humanity, I was just starting to believe in you.
You solemnly climb up a ladder and flip a sign over that's like 0 days since Faith in Humanity.
Multiplayer.
Now it's time for the multiplayer, and boy, did you guys come out in force to interact with us and the prompt that we put up on the Facebook page. Dennis, what was the prompt?
I asked for confessions, which who knew there were so many people ready to confess, on what your biggest gaming binge is. So that's either, you know, longest continuous playtime or just a game that kind of took over your life for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like I said, we have a whole bunch of responses. We're going to like power right through them without commentary until the very end, unless something really crazy comes up. I have one that actually came in via email that I'm going to lead us off with. Okay.
Cool.
Okay. So this is from Graham via the contact form, who writes in saying, in my long and excessive gaming career, I've had many days where I clocked in over 12 hours of gaming, so most of my binge gaming memories don't stand out. However, I have pretty strong memory of when I first bought the classic Fallout box set, which included Fallout, Fallout 2, and Fallout Tactics. Now, I played Fallout 2 before. In fact, it's one of my favorite games, but I had never played through the original Fallout, so it was a new experience for me, and I wanted to play it first. I spent the night downloading patches and trying to get the original game to run on my Windows 7 machine, and eventually I succeeded, right? But it was a late night, so I had to, you know, wait until tomorrow. Continuing on here, I woke up early in the morning and what the heck, I had nothing better to do, so I turned on Fallout 1 and began my post-apocalyptic journey. Now, at the time, I had a very raccoon-like attention span when it came to video games. Normally, I couldn't play a game for more than a couple of hours before getting bored and taking a break to do something else. Not with Fallout, though. I played the whole game nonstop. I didn't lose steam like I did with most games. That game just grabbed me. For what might have been 12 hours, I played Fallout 1 to completion. I'll always prefer Fallout 2 more than but Fallout 1 was special for the experience it gave me. Since then, I hadn't really played a game of that length in one sitting like I did. Maybe it just hit me in the right way, in the right place, at the right time, but that's the most notable binge gaming memory. Yeah.
Cool. Nice.
Yep.
You want me to jump right into Tim?
Yep, go ahead. Take Tim.
So Tim says, when I was maybe 14 years old, I went on a weekend trip with a friend and his family to their cabin in northern Michigan. Rather than wander the woods, build fires, or whatever else you do normally on a trip like that, we played co-op Secret of Mana the entire time. But we started on the drive up on a tiny TV in his parents' van and didn't stop until we finished the game. I do not regret our wasted weekend and at all, and consider it a pretty awesome memory.
Yeah.
Secret of Mana is such a great game.
Yeah. That's not a waste if you're playing with other people. Ben, what's Glenn say?
Glenn says, the biggest gaming binge I had was the first Knights of the Old Republic for the original Xbox. Good on ya. I spent the entire summer indoors playing in this rich universe. This was a game that finally allowed my inner six-year-old to experience being in a character in a universe I love without being stuck in the shadow of the original canon. I wasted an entire summer playing both light and dark sides of the story while experimenting with those force powers. Also, it helped that it was based in 3rd edition Dungeons & Dragons rules, so I took the mechanics very well.
Yeah. Neat.
I'll add to that later, but yeah.
Yeah. David, what's David say?
Oh, I see what you did there. Guild Wars 2. Once upon a time, a stupid David took a misstep while cleaning the pool, fell, and fractured his tailbone. I was stuck in bed, lying on my stomach for almost 3 weeks.
Wow.
Ended up bringing my laptop in and set it and my mouse up on two of the collapsible TV trays next to the bed and played pretty much all day while healing.
Wow. Yeah, so basically that is the video game equivalent of Rear Window. I'm telling you, Margaret...
Notable story worth interjecting. I don't know why this made me think of it, but I had a setup when I was deep into Lord of the Rings Online where I'd play while I was falling asleep. So I was in my bed and I just had my laptop kind of sitting on my chest and the mouse by my side, and had a roommate walk in and just realized, like, there is no way to convince you right now that I'm not watching porn. He like turned and left before I could show him the game screen, and I thought about calling him back in to show him it, but
I assure you,
more weird.
Come in here.
Wait. I was your roommate at that point.
We can share this together.
it was in the house on Daniels. But
oh, okay, okay.
Yeah.
I was one of several.
Yeah, one of several.
One of several.
Anyway, yes.
Tom writes in saying, when I got Final Fantasy VII, my first Final Fantasy, I think I played it solidly until I got out of Midgar, maybe a 12-hour stretch. When I got my Dreamcast with Soul Calibur, I unlocked literally everything in the game, all the way through to Liquid Metal T-1000 mode, in one weekend that left me with very sore thumbs for the next few days. And there's the entire period of my life I spent playing Diablo 2 and every game of Civilization ever. And I think that I hit 100 hours of Dark Souls after 4 to 6 weeks. Yes.
Yeah.
I like that you mentioned the question mark. Yeah.
I wanted to make sure it was included. Yeah. Dennis, what's Murph say?
Yeah, Murph says, I have spent a dumb amount of time on Soulforge, even though Hearthstone is better in every way. Also, the terrible Game of Thrones browser game got its claws in me at some point. It took me way too long to realize there wasn't anything to that game except for a Skinner box. Kick the habit on both of them now, though. I've never heard of Soulforge. It sounds like a thing I should avoid.
Yeah, especially since it's mentioned in the same breath as Hearthstone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ben, what does Gustavo say?
Gustavo says, Final Fantasy XIV, just faffing around, killing silly dragons all day, means I just wasted an embarrassing amount of hours on that game. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's more.
Excuse me, sorry. In a non-MMO game, I went to the midnight release of Modern Warfare 3 and played it until I beat the game 9 or so hours later.
I just want to call it
a pretty solid game to play through.
Yeah, 9 hours, it's nothing to sneeze at. I just want to say I love the turn of phrase, faffing around killing silly dragons.
Yeah. Say, if Gustavo, if you have a Twitter account, that needs to be your Twitter bio.
Trust me, we'll know. We'll know. David, what's Matt say?
Sure. Once I spent 15 straight hours playing Vice City, mostly not even doing missions, just screwing around exploring.
He must like 80s music.
Yeah.
there you is... imply that there's people that don't like 80s music.
It's pretty good. Oh my gosh. I'm going to say this wrong, and I know that he sent in a pronunciation guide. I'm so sorry. Mikhail, I believe. Mikhail. So Mikhail Christensen writes in saying, once I got home early on a Friday and decided to make White Russians and play Civ 5 before getting some housework done. Having bought the necessary ingredients to my desk, brought the necessary ingredients to my desk, I only realized my state and that 8 hours plus had passed when my wife came home from a late shift and I had to get up from the chair to get the door. So he brought the ingredients to his desk, and then 8 hours later, I assume no White Russians? I'll continue. although I've had longer gaming binges in my youth, that was the one time I felt like the protagonist in a cautionary tale about video game addiction. I saw a future self unconscious amidst a lodge of diapers and pizza boxes with a culvert of a factory sadness overflowing into my living room where concerned friends and relatives gathered for an intervention. In the earlier parts of middle school, however, my friends and I would spend better parts of entire weekends playing Mario Kart 64 and various SNES and N64 games in 12-hour-plus stretches overnight. I remember both of us knowing all the various shortcuts and glitches in Mario Kart, such that playing eventually became an exercise in elaborate trolling and deception, often using ploys that, upon reflection, were only possible in local split-screen.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's all. I've definitely experienced that time warp. So, Christopher Schley says, I was in high school when Fallout 2 came out. I faked being sick for an entire week so I could play it while my parents were at work. What a glorious 5 days that was. Nice. Being homeschooled, you can't fake being sick. I am envious.
That's introductory lying 101.
Yeah,
they're like compensatory muscles you never developed.
Yeah, it's. I mean, Ferris Bueller. I was just like, "What is this madness?"
Ben, why don't you round us out with Matthew?
Matthew says, Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2 was undoubtedly my biggest obsession. A college roommate and I couldn't stop until we found all the gaps to jump. At this point, there wasn't much help on the internet, and we would have refused to use it anyway. The day we finally jumped the "Are you serious?" gap, it felt like my whole life had rushed back in, and I had so many responsibilities to attend to.
Hint, you did the whole time. You were just ignoring them.
suppress. Yeah. Yeah.
Press it down. Yeah. Huh. David, how about you? Like, do you have an experience that of falling into a game hole?
Sure. I feel like a lot of mine tend to be more like, when I play a game, I tend to then, like, all of my entertainment consumption result revolves around it. So, like, if I'm playing Deus Ex, I'm, you know, watching Steampunk Cyberpunk stuff on Netflix and, like, you know, reading stuff online and, you know, stuff like that. I would say in terms of, like, actual binges, probably would be the fact that I never play any of the games we're going to do for our extrasodes until like the week before.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
That just always ends up unfortunately being a thing. So Spec Ops The Line and then Bioshock Infinite, I both played like 8 hours a day. Mm-hmm. And those are both, you know, it's one of those things I wouldn't want to do it for every game all the time, but at least for those games, I felt like they definitely gained something from, you know, playing them all in one, you know, intense, life-consuming sitting.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'll go ahead with mine. I have a distinct recollection of when I was, probably like 12 or 13, something like that. It was at a time when my brother was working at the Babbage's, which would become the GameStop where I worked. You know, and he brought home Wild Arms 2 on a checkout. And so this was the middle of summertime, and I had like 3 or 4 days to play as much of it as possible. And so my poor grandparents, like, I was over at their cottage, and just like I basically played until I felt like I was going to get bed sores. I played it so much that I like really burned myself out. And that's like the strongest recollection that I have outside of kind of the recent spate of playing stuff for assignment. And it's kind of like, oh, I need to like plant my ass in this chair and play as much of this as possible. Like, you know, specifically like Dark Souls 2. I played that until I was just so goddamn sick of it around the time when it first came out. Just, you know, just because it needed beat. So, yeah. But yeah, Wild Arms 2 is like my first real introduction because of the artificial, you know, time constraint that was put on me to play and beat a JRPG in 4 days.
Yeah, that seems less than optimal.
Yeah. Really, really a bad way to play that, especially a game that I enjoy, you know.
Yeah. What, like four days straight is 88 hours? No, 48 hours times two, so 92 hours. Mm-hmm. And a good number of you know, JRPGs have more content than that if you go and do everything. So
yeah.
It's impressive.
Just to be the math guy, yeah, it's 96 hours. Yeah. All right.
Oh, what'd I say?
You said 92. Well,
one, what is that
close,
like by
close
comparison?
Enough for government work.
By comparison, they say a lot of people's like first run through Dark Souls will be 100 hours.
Nah, it's 60.
Well, you think?
Yeah.
Oh, I clocked in around 100.
Really? Yeah, Dark Souls, the how long to beat for that is 65 for combined. A completionist run is, you know, is 106 and a half. My first run of Dark Souls 1 was like 70 hours. And just
I'm
for,
at 30.
Yeah,
and I'm not halfway through.
The Wild Arms 2 combined playthrough is 47 hours. So
nice.
Yeah. Pretty crazy for 12 to 14 year old Cole. But you know, summer vacation is a thing in and of itself. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, mine was actually a little bit later in life. I got Final Fantasy X out over not necessarily the Christmas holidays, but kind of that Christmas slow period. And it was one of my first co-ops that I, you know, I was in at the time. And so, you know, here I was, this, you know, young, I was living at home at that point, this young industrious kid who was going to bed early at like, you know, 8:30 every night because he wanted his rest for work, when really I was just going in and playing Final Fantasy X until like 3 a.m. every night. So yeah, didn't do much sleeping during that time.
Yeah,
and powered through the game. I don't remember exactly how long, but it can't have been too much over, you know, a week and a half, because I just wouldn't have been able to sustain that from a sleep perspective.
Just a week long orgy of depravity.
Yeah. All under the guise of, okay, well, you know, I've got a big meeting tomorrow. I'm going to hit the sack early. Be proud of me, Mom and Dad.
And this is probably about 8 years after Final Fantasy X came out.
Yeah, it was definitely long after the game.
Yeah,
it was one of those things where it's like, okay, Final Fantasy is a gaming blind spot that I need to fix. Mm-hmm. That's when I asked the GameStop guy, "Do you have any Final Fantasy VIIs that I may purchase?" And he laughed at me and then said that Final Fantasy X was about as good as I was likely to do.
Oh,
yeah.
Ben, how about you?
Yeah, so I think I have a lot of games that I binge, or like that's typically how I play games that I'm really into. So like some notable ones that I can think of, a lot of times it occurs over like breaks like Thanksgiving or Christmas. But like I remember Saints Row the Third, I played that in a super condensed period over winter break. Knights of the Old Republic was another one, because when I played it, it was at my dad's house, and so I could only play it on the weekends. So I had to play that as much as possible. But yeah, I do this with a lot of games, though. Uncharted games, you know, Last of Us, all that.
Yeah, you really do. You set your teeth into something, and you just kind of work on it till it's done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So are there any like common threads through the listener responses that we want to kind of hit? Like, you know, some pretty good gems in there. Like people didn't throw their good time after bad game.
It seems like it's, you kind of look back and you're like, yeah, that's fun. I don't want to do that all the time though.
Yeah.
Murph spent good time on bad games. It sounds like, although I'm not familiar with either of those. Sorry, buddy.
the one I noticed, although I'm not saying who said it, was someone mentioned Diablo.
Yeah, yeah.
And who said that? But regardless, that at one point in my life was an institution. Mm-hmm. that was very much like, that was what I did every day after school all the time.
Yeah.
That was Tom Reeve.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, what's weird is, like, I have such a conflicted relationship with this stuff because, you know, in order to make the things that I make, I have to play through whole long games, you know, on a deadline, right? And it stands to reason that, like, oh, if you were doing this full time, like if this was your gig, then you would do nothing but be playing these games. But in actuality, I think binges arise from that scarcity of time. And like when you see that huge uninterrupted block on your calendar or whatever, it's like, okay, I can fill this with game, as opposed to doing like the healthier thing, which is approaching something in play sessions of no longer than 90 minutes apiece, you know?
Yeah.
To me, like that's the equilibrium. I would love to just spread everything out into 90 minute play sessions.
Yeah. I feel like, it almost depends on the tone of the game, because I know, like, both the games that I've binged that I feel like have been better for me binging would be, you know, Spec Ops and BioShock Infinite, and both of those were games that very much were not exactly positive games about the role of, like, filling your life with violence.
Yeah.
And so I feel like there's a certain point which, like, binging them very much felt with a tone, whereas I feel like a more laid back game might lose things by binging. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they trade on exhaustion and, you know, kind of just a general sense of fatigue.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Hmm. So yeah, thank you everybody for writing in. That was, I think, a record amount of response. Was there anything else that we wanted to say before I wrapped up? I feel like I took us into it too soon.
No. We should talk about what we're binging now.
Yeah, we probably that we ought to. But if you want to participate in these, they generally go up on our Facebook group in the afternoon on Tuesdays. That is facebook.com/TheLevelPodcast.
The Grind.
Now it's time for The Grind, where we talk about the games we've been playing over the past, you know, week or so, give or take. Does anybody want to volunteer to go first?
I would.
David beat you. Go ahead.
All right. I've got a couple, but most of them are like one sentence things. Jala gifted me Risk of Rain, which is ironic because we are discussing whether there's any games on Mac. So apparently there's at least one.
Debating, you were questioning the existence of, and we were assuring you of the existence of.
Silence. Silence. It's a very, very short debate. Yeah.
Weirdly, speaking of, I just went into my Humble Bundle stuff because I'm sure she gave that to you off of the most recent Humble Bundle.
Yeah,
I have upwards of, I think, maybe 50 unclaimed games. I want them to turn into giveaways for people. However, I want to make a spreadsheet for you guys to lay like first, like, claim, you know, for first claim on if you want them.
You want to make a spread of it? Surprise, surprise.
Yes, I do want to make a spreadsheet.
I have to be honest, this last Steam sale, you almost all got bad rats for 25 cents a pop.
I'm so sorry to interrupt you, David, but continue.
Sure.
Risk of Rain on Mac.
I've not gotten to play it a great deal, just a little bit. It seems like a cool concept. I need to get into it. But I just wanted to call it off for having quite possibly at least the default controls being the worst mouse and keyboard controls I've ever seen in any game. So by way of example, shooting, the default controls for shooting is capital Z, by which I mean you would better hold down the shift button or you're not shooting anything.
You got to take off the safety.
Can you do caps lock Z, or does that not work?
Yes, caps lock also works, but it's just like, why would you make that the default?
Yeah,
it really so it's like a round based side scrolling roguelike platformer. Is that a fair appraisal?
Not exactly round based. It's round based in as much as timed, and like every 10 minutes it gets harder.
Yeah, like but it's like waves, like wave based.
Oh yeah,
right?
yeah.
And so with that in mind, it really does seem like something that is optimized for gamepad.
Oh yeah, it completely is. Like at some point, I'm going to get a gamepad. I was just kind of experimenting with it, and it was just though the fact that like the mouse and keyboard controls weren't even like by default lowercase letters, just I found hilarious. So that was mainly what I wanted to share.
So this raises like a question, which is at what point do we cease, do we cease holding bad mouse and keyboard controls against a game that is obviously designed for gamepad, right? Because that is probably a legit complaint that somebody has. Like, why aren't they kowtowing to my demand?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't feel like buying a controller for my Mac. So I'd appreciate having good keyboard controls, and it takes so little time to think through and do right.
Yeah, it's just like so in this case, it's obviously absurd, right? Like it's ridiculous that it's capital Z instead of lowercase.
Sure,
Z.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, just like in general,
Bastion was hard to play with a mouse and keyboard.
Yeah,
but that's because I understand it was very much designed around a controller. I respect that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I mean, just like I'm thinking of, you know, kind of like really big console kind of experiences that. You know, like Dark Souls, right? Playing Dark Souls with mouse and keyboard is totally an option, but it is not an option anybody should take. In fact, it is such a bad option that you wonder why they included it in the first place.
You're wondering why they didn't force you to play with that option?
Oh, no. Yes. Yeah. I mean, come on. This is a stupid, dumb game for babies.
Oh, that's, I'm not saying that.
No. I'm just...
I feel like... I agree. Overall, I tend to be fairly tolerant of that, particularly on some of the more like platformy indie games. Mm-hmm. I would say what annoys me is games that are explicitly ports that do it poorly. The big one I think of is Tomb Raider definitely suffered. And I would say both Tomb Raider and Resident Evil, the most recent one. Forget what number they're on. Thank you. Both, particularly in the QuickTime events, very obviously suffered for being on mouse and keyboard.
Yeah. Well, I mean, eventually it gets ridiculous. Like, if it's like mash A to go, but A is mapped to Z because they didn't want to change the graphic for the, for the button that popped up.
Right. I think it's not that bad so much as... You know, I read a really great article once. I think it was some like interview on Penny Arcade or something like that. You know, it was discussing the difference between mouse and control stick, just in terms of like, not just the obvious differences is one's a mouse, one's a control stick, but I mean in terms of like what their significance was to the gameplay and what you needed to think through.
Yeah.
And I feel like it strikes me, particularly if we're supposed to be making games as craftsmanship and art, you know, it annoys me that people don't think through that.
Yeah. So. What else?
So, sure. Been continuing to play Gauntlet. You know, overall, it's still a really fun game. my group, Jala, Nolan, Slade, have gone on to the second level. The game's really, really formulaic. I'm really enjoying it, but I almost feel like it would be better as some sort of like MMO or something where the fact that levels were formulaic wasn't so obvious, you know, where kind of grinding was a bit more part and parcel.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's one of those things. It's a game that, you know, I don't regret playing because it's just kind of fun on its own grounds.
Yeah.
So the main thing I've been doing actually is I got back into Fallen London. So okay. That's a game I really, really struggle. Like, I'm playing it throughout the week, and I'm thinking, what am I possibly going to talk about on the level? Because I feel like this game, basically, its end result is, you know, its whole thing is there's, you know, several dozen storylines going on that are just interconnecting, and, you know, there's no real, like, guidance to it. It's just you're seeing constantly different perspectives on the storyline. So it's the end result is you kind of end up being like the guy in like the movies whose like house is filled with just like newspaper clippings connected by string.
Right.
Like that's basically what the gameplay is you just drawing inferences between these various events. So it's a thing where it's kind of like, what do I say, you know, to explain, like, what I've been doing that's been awesome on this game, because, like, you know, you guys don't know what the parabola is, or Prisoner's Honey, or why, you know, I'd be worried about the two, or, you know, why I suspect that the Captivating Princess may be a Lovecraftian horror bent on, you know, conquering London.
Yeah.
Like, it's inherently, by definition, if I were to explain any of this, I would sound like the rambling guy that has, you know, string running all along his house.
So that's weird, right? Because, like, that kind of intrinsic dictionary that's built up, like, oh, you understand this because you're inside of that, and, you know, it's probably more rewarding for the fact that it's so esoteric that, taken out of context, it, you know, is complete gibberish, right? Like, you know, I can't think of another, like, similarly impenetrable work. Good.
It's rewarding it in the early levels of investment as well, though, right? It's not just when you're in too deep. It's, like, because, you know, you've talked about it a lot on the show. It from what I understand, it's good even when you've just started playing it, right?
Right. It's very much a thing where it's a little bit not very different in execution and resulting tone, but it's a little bit similar to, like, say, a Dark Souls, where it basically, there's no exposition. It simply throws you into everything. So in the early going of the game, it's very much, you know, you don't know what anything is, and it's kind of fun wandering around and trying to figure out what's going on around you. And then as the game goes along, it's more and more you start putting together the pieces and kind of can see the big picture.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Yeah. And so, like, something that I'm just kind of musing on here is, you know, if part of the value of a story-based game like that, like, you know, mm-hmm. if they call their thing, what is it, Story Nexus, right?
Yes.
Like, you know, just a game that is meant to tell these kind of stories. You know, does it lose something by creating stories that you can't actually relate outside of it? Because this is something that I've kind of, like, run into when I'm listening to people talk about, say, Sunless Sea, right? Which is in the same world and kind of has this, you know, same charm that I think that we're getting at. Like, I wonder if they're, you know, if there's something that's lost by the fact that you can't actually relate what happens inside this game. You know, and not just from, like, a crass, like, marketing, how can we spread this, you know, the word about this game, nobody can talk about it in a coherent way, but more so, like, is it something that you can share with people outside of, you know, outside of a group that also plays this thing, right? Because I can tell a story about something that happens in Dark Souls, you know, and probably have it be, you know, relatively coherent to somebody from the outside. But when you start talking about Prisoner Honey, all I can think of is any number of explanations as to what Prisoner Honey is, most of which are probably not more coherent than what the actual explanation is, but probably funnier, which is, I think, the honey that they feed people to turn them into prisoners.
To be fair, prisoner's honey is honey that transports you. It's basically the game's answer to opium, except that instead of just giving you trippy dreams, it literally transports you to trippy dreams, which is problematic because dreams maybe actually exist on the other side of the mirrors, and which is problematic because maybe the mirrors are the you know, in some sort of larger conspiracy that something's wrong with them. And I keep asking the illusionists about it, but they simply tell me that all their acts are just done with mirrors. So.
Yeah, you're right. It is completely unintelligible to someone who hasn't played the game.
Yeah. But still, there's like that is resonant to you because that right. has, you know, it's cool ideas, cool ideas for very short story snippets. And yeah, it just, you're in it and you know what all those things kind of connect to. So
exactly. I'd say, you know, a stated purpose of the game, you know, kind of getting back to what you're asking, is it's definitely supposed to be collaborative among players of the game. So like a stated purpose of it is supposed to be that no one person can experience the whole game. So definitely they encourage collaboration among players. I agree that, you know, it's unfortunate that you can't quite share out of it.
Yeah.
More specifically, what drove me back is, they had their Halloween event where basically, you can do various things and receive visions of your future, which they've the developers have suggested are basically pictures of what they're planning on doing with Endgame. And I don't know, it's almost all of them are incredibly disturbing and kind of horrifying. So, like, there's like, five main scenarios, you know, like, one of them involves, basically...
Again, unintelligible to someone who hasn't played the game.
Yeah.
Sure. the entire concept of light being destroyed. One of them, you know, several of them involve you becoming a Lovecraftian whore. A couple of them involve Lovecraftian whores taking over... It's just very much like I'm interested to see how they do the end game, considering all of the scenarios they've painted are very final and apocalyptic.
Mm-hmm.
And so are they going to try and have each of those as a possible end game?
Well, again, this is kind of how they tend to do storylines. I'll be honest, I cheated and... By communicating with other players, basically read all the endings. You know, basically it's the powers that be kind of have a plan for London that involves you know, light being destroyed and you know, the liberation of the night. And so the issue is just, are you either on the side of the powers that be, are you a regular person who suddenly finds there's no light in the world, or are you, you know, siding with the whores that decide to take advantage of it? So it's very much, it's more different perspectives on the same event.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
Yeah. So I guess the moral of the story is, I cannot explain to you at all why this game is awesome, but it kind of is. So yeah,
that's fine.
That's all I have to say about that.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Dennis, you chimed in second, so I will throw to you.
Yeah. So I like David, I've got a couple throwaways. The first one being Fat Princess Piece of Cake, which is a free mobile game. set in the Fat Princess universe, which is just such a rich, rich metaverse for games to come from. No, it's a completely generic match three game that's free, but it's notable because if you get to a certain point in the game, you will get a code for a free copy of the real Fat Princess game.
Huh.
which is a you know, acclaimed PS3 downloadable title, and it's like a $15 value, and it's not that hard to get that far in the game. So I'm just calling it out, Fat Princess Piece of Cake. It's in and of itself, there's nothing really to recommend it, except for you can get another game for free that would normally cost you $15. So I think that's pretty stiffy.
So you'll play this boring game for a long time in order to play a good game.
Yeah, it's not like it's bad. It's just, you know, it's got some interesting window dressing, but there's nothing unique to the Match 3 formula that, yeah, you know, would recommend it.
I mean, is there hope that they're going to lure people into kind of a more lucrative freemium, free-to-play, buy special blocks kind of thing with this? Like, I'm trying to understand the business model behind that.
I don't know. You know, the kind of people who would... Well, I don't want to make assumptions. My guess is that the kind of people who'd fall prey to that aren't really that familiar with Fat Princess, the real game, anyway. And so it seems weird to have that as a carrot for it. What I will say is that it's really weird to see the logo for the company that made God of War pop up on a mobile Match 3 game.
I wanted to see that crossover. So, yeah. With the title, I mean, what does Cake have to do with Match 3?
Nothing. It's like I said, it's window dressing.
What does candy have to do with Match 3?
Yeah, exactly.
So cool. I guess you could say the cake Seven is shows. A lie.
Okay.
Oh, God.
Well, what's that? God damn it. Okay. Fucking. I'm so angry. David's. Seven sows followed by a portal meme. Yeah, so I just started that with a so. I'm sorry. Uh-huh. David is making reference to the fact that it's my assertion that there's a class of person that you can't say cake around without them launching into a teenaged frenzy of portal reference meme kind of things. And David has proven he's one of those people. So,
yeah,
I am why we can't have nice things.
Yeah. Sure. So yeah, that's get yourself a free game. Play a Fat Princess Piece of Cake for a bit. If you don't already have Fat Princess, fair warning, you have to log into Facebook, I think, to get it. But
that's where they get you.
Yeah, right. So, oh no, some other thing has my Facebook info.
Everybody wants a bite of that Facebook login, Apple.
Yeah, sure. You can have it. Give me a free game. $15 is fine.
Where's your time? Okay, this is going to sound like a snarky thing, but I'm just going to ask this. Do you consider your time to be worthless?
My time to be worthless?
Yes, absolutely.
My time or my downtime? Because I spend my downtime on some pretty stupid shit.
Okay, yeah. Okay, but even then. But even then, you know, Fat Princess has to be what, a $10 game?
$15, hey.
Okay, $15 game. Like different priorities here. Like for me, I would much rather pay the $15, and I don't want people to triangulate the money that I make, but that is below what it would be if I worked an hour to, you know, play. I'm just being honest here, okay? So like I would much rather take the money that I had from working an hour to, you know, buy the game that I wanted in the first place as opposed to
No, that's fair. So in all honesty, Jen is the one who unlocked the code and she's on mat leave, so she's just like, whatever.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay, cool.
So is this like the whole statistics you hear? You hear, like, if Bill Gates was walking down the street and there's a $100 bill, it would not be worth his time to bend over and pick it up.
It's like $44,000 for Bill Gates.
Yeah. So of course, walking down the street and there's a copy of Fat Princess on the ground, it's not worth his time.
Well, no, it's worth my time because bending down to pick up a copy of Fat Princess, that is an instant. That's a moment, right? There's no opportunity cost associated with that.
That is a swift action.
Yeah.
And you get one of those a turn.
Yeah, exactly, right? It is a trivial action, right? I hate to be gross talking about the time value of money or whatever, but you know, especially as it relates to gaming. But to me, like, to have that be the explicit goal, if it's something that, yeah, I mean,
I was happy with myself.
Yeah,
or rather happy with Jen, I guess.
Yeah, like your explanation of the way the shook out makes it feel less ridiculous. However, far be it for me to talk about the way anybody spends their time. Sure. So, yeah.
So, yeah, and I mentioned last week that I've been on a bit of a mobile resurgence. And so another mobile game recommended by David Petroco is Terra Battle, which is really, really, I've really dug it. It's kind of like Final Fantasy Tactics meets Go, like the board game Go.
Hmm.
So it's all about moving your pieces around the board to bracket enemy pieces and deal damage to them. And the real hook of it is that the distance you can move a piece is not limited. The time you can spend moving the piece is. And basically the way it works is you can only move one piece a turn, but depending on how many of your other pieces that you move it over, you can kind of adjust those pieces as well. But all of that takes time. And so it's this really fun mechanic where you kind of sit and look at the game board at the beginning of your turn and go, okay, if I move this guy in a circle here and then down across the board there and then back up the right side, I'll get everyone in the position that I want. But I don't know if I can physically do that fast enough to, you know, do it before the timer runs out. And if the timer runs out, the piece drops wherever you have it at the moment. And so it's this risk reward of, you know, trying to do a bunch of things really fast with a higher chance of messing them up, which would just screw me overall for the turn? Or do I do, you know, just one or two things that I know I can accomplish but deal less damage and open myself up to more attacks from the enemy?
Yeah.
So it's a ton of fun, and I'm really glad that David recommended the game to me.
You said this is a turn-based strategy game that also has Go elements to it?
Yeah, so like it's on a grid, you know, you've got pieces that have different stats and can deal different damage. There's a bit of a rock, paper, scissors of, you know, swords are strong against bows, are strong against lances, are strong against swords.
Yeah, like Fire Emblem.
Maybe, I haven't played it.
Yeah.
But sure. But you know, the way you attack is by bracketing enemy pieces.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Huh. Super, super fun.
Yeah. So this is for iOS.
This is for iOS, and I don't know if it's on Android.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And is it, can you know, like a lot of these strategy games for iOS are designed to be played multiplayer. Is this one where you're running through a single player kind of like set of challenge maps, or is it kind of trying to shunt you into playing against other people online?
Yeah, I have only seen single player missions.
Okay.
So I don't think that there is a multiplayer aspect to this, at least that is easy to find. And I think I would have found it by now.
Yeah.
Is there a story behind it? Is it kind of just abstract kill the dudes?
There's, you know, there's some fantasy gobbledygook, but even your quote unquote main characters, I think, are random. So it's kind of the story of your party going and doing stuff, and you'll get certain named characters, but from what I can tell, you know, it's just random who you start with, and there's no mention of them in the story. It's like your group goes to this town and you make a show of force in the tavern to win people to your cause, or you know, your party has to go through these dangerous woods to get to the other town and stuff like that. So just
that's actually honestly, the name of the town, the other town.
Yeah.
In caps. It's as minimalist as I want it to be, because I don't want a ton of backstory in my mobile game that I'm playing for 30 seconds at a time.
Yeah, that's actually pretty. So I forget if you mentioned this or not. So this is developed by Mistwalker, right? Which is the development team that kind of split off of Squaresoft, Square Enix rather, in order to make kind of JRPG kind of things. It's the studio that is headed up by Hironobu Sakaguchi. And they did like The Last Story and Blue Dragon. Like, this is a pretty storied development team in
terms
of,
these people have a pedigree.
Yes.
I was not aware of. Okay, yeah, interesting.
Yes, they do.
Very cool.
Yeah. So and they've done some iOS and Android stuff in the past, but this seems to be their big one. So this is actually a pretty high profile title that I was completely unaware existed.
Yeah, well, yeah, thanks to David for putting me onto it, and it's good. It shows its pedigree, I guess.
Nice.
Awesome. So that is Terra Battle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool.
And yeah, that's all I'll cover for this week. I'm trying to. Sorry. Man, I almost missed the big one. I played and beat Murasaki Baby.
Oh, yeah.
For Vita, because I got my Vita back from David, and that game is fantastic.
That's the Suda51 PS Vita platformer, right?
Yeah. Did Suda51 work directly on it? I'm trying to think now.
Yeah. So it wasn't. It wasn't Suda51, but it was Massimo Guarini, who previously worked on Killer7, No More Heroes, and Shadows of the Dam. So he was like, he was
the understudy for Suda51.
A little bit, yeah. He was like the protege.
Yeah.
And all of those are pretty good games. So.
Yeah, and this one's no exception. So it's played almost exclusively with touch controls, which actually works pretty well because you're just leading this little girl by her hand around the world. And the entire world is just so dark and twisted and weird, but there's also like kind of a lightheartedness about it. Like it's cute at the same time. Which I don't know if that makes any sense. It makes it even more unsettling in some ways to walk around, but it's just a really cool environment to have the game set in.
Yeah, I think so. It explicitly takes design cues from Edward Gorey, and his work popped up on Neverending Nightmares here recently. I think that is just the 2014 crazy designer touchstone for a lot of like visuals in games.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
And you know, that's probably the best part about the game. In terms of the puzzles, you can shift the background, and each of the backgrounds is interesting to look at in and of its own right. But each background has its own power. So you know, one will turn her little heart balloon that she's got to hang on to into a stone to kind of keep her in place during windstorms, or one will allow you to electrically power machines in the area, and you kind of use different combinations of those to get through the levels. And then, you know, as you get further into the game, there are kind of time constraints and it gets more difficult. And so there is kind of it's not all just puzzle solving and then you're done. There's kind of a platforming element to it as well. But it works really well given that it's all touch controls, which is interesting. But yeah, it's a really cute game. There's a soundbite from one of the levels. You know, you're in a land that's kind of constructed out of TVs, and there's like old-timey TV clips playing in the background. And there's something, I forget how it starts, but it kind of talks about the value of telling tales that are so dark, so weird, so happy. I was like, that is the perfect phrase to describe Murasaki Baby. It's so dark, so weird, so happy. So yeah. So it was a fun. You can beat it in an afternoon if you sit down and play it straight through.
Is it
highly worth it?
Is it unfair to say that you are a sucker for stuff that uses every feature on the Buffalo?
No, by
Buffalo, I mean PS Vita.
Yes. No, that's absolutely true. I'm a sucker for games that would not be able to be just ported over to PS4.
Yeah.
And this is one of them.
Yeah. So you beat this like over the course of like the past week. So it's a pretty short game and therefore not worth anybody's time or attention or money.
Right. It's very snackable.
Oh, God damn it. Oh, that is the word of the day, Dennis. I'm just going to sound the foghorn here. You just said a word that done pissed Cole right the fuck off.
I feel like that's been the theme of the night. It's like, how much can we push Cole before he goes on murderous rampage?
Sorry.
How many gray hairs can we give Cole tonight? Yeah.
It'll make me look distinguished. Sorry, you said snackable, and now you need to sit in the corner for a minute.
That was intentionally bad.
Okay, cool. Yeah. As long as okay, so you know what you did, therefore that means you could stop it. Like you could have not done it.
I was pushing your buttons.
Cool.
No. what I will say, an interesting, like, partway through the game, and I'm sure, I'm guessing it was just kind of a weird software quirk on my side and not something that everyone is seeing, but like I started getting messages that it couldn't save the game. Like, you know, it just auto-saves and doesn't really tell you about it, which is fine. But I'd get kind of Vita messages that popped up. So not within the game, but like the Vita system messages saying, could not save the file, error, XYZ. And I could, you know, close that and move on. But that meant I was paranoid the entire time that if I actually closed the game, I would lose all my progress. And so I just kept the game open and put the Vita into sleep mode and just made sure it had power the entire time that I played it. But that was easy to take care of. I don't know why I saw that, but I got through, dodged that bullet.
Oh, well.
And really enjoyed the experience along the way.
Yeah, just like it's getting harder to avoid not having a PS4, it's getting harder to avoid not having a Vita.
I'm telling you, it's worth it. It's so worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like Vita is almost becoming like the secondary indie. Well, not, you know what I mean. The secondary indie platform.
Yeah. I think that's accurate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's me.
Cool. Ben, how about you?
Yeah, so I just have one. I played Destiny over the weekend. I said I'd never go back, but just like Al Pacino in one of the Godfather movies, I came back in. But I think the last time I talked about it, I was at level 20. So I got up to level 24. They introduced raids, essentially, in the game. So they have, like, week-long raids that they change out weekly. They'll have, like, special raids on the weekend, and they'll upgrade different multiplayer and different raids to have higher experience so they can... They'll have a weekend where you specifically do Control, or a weekend where you specifically do a certain type of multiplayer game. So that was kind of interesting. So just played that for a little bit. It's fun, but I think, just like the last time I talked about it, I think I'm ready to be done with it now, maybe. But
I mean, so in a way, you kind of fell for their trap, right? And I say trap. Okay, when I say trap, I don't necessarily mean a bad thing, but like... Can you, Ben, envision a world where they introduce some kind of content update that draws you back in that's kind of like similar to this? Or are you inoculated against like anything raid? Like they would have to substantially shake it up enough for you to, you know, take the plunge again.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying I'm never going to play it again. I mean, the multiplayer is pretty fun. It has good replayability like Halo did and like some of the Modern Warfare games. But, yeah, so it's not bad. I don't mind playing that. I think one of the issues, because I know I had this early on, feeling like the multiplayer was really imbalanced, and like they claim that the level doesn't matter in some of the multiplayer matches, but one of the things I don't know how they get around is your weapons upgrade too. And so the further along you go, your weapons will have more abilities. Like it'll be like faster reload, might have more ammo, and it might do more damage. So they might be able to equalize like the damage sort of thing, but I don't know how they equalize all the other things going on, you know? So I still don't know how they balance it, but I'm kind of at the high end of the spectrum, so it's not as much of an issue anymore. But yeah.
Issue for you means you're a big issue. So suddenly
I don't care.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a cautionary tale, right? Yeah. But I mean, it's not bad. It's a fine multiplayer, I guess. But yeah.
What's in the hopper to replace that one?
I have something in mind, but I don't want to spill the beans yet. So maybe it'll be a surprise in a week.
Oh yeah, you're coming up on your birthday too, so you're gonna have a bunch of stuff coming in probably.
Plane ticket home, pretty much, is all I'm asking for.
that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So do you mind if I go on to mine?
Yes.
You mind, or I can go? That's a terrible question.
Yeah. Please, what have you been binging on, Cole? Yeah,
binging. Well, that's weird that you say that, because I actually finished a game, you guys.
Yeah,
I put my mind to it, and I beat Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney Dual Destinies.
Oh, check it off the backlog.
Yep,
an index card bites the dust.
Yeah.
Wait, what do you do with the index card when you actually finish it?
I tape it to my wall.
Ah, okay, nice.
Yeah. Also, I haven't marked it complete on backloggery because there's still DLC that I'm playing. You know, I feel like I've talked about it enough. Like last week, I talked about the anime surprise. And you know, just how crazy it is. I can't say I'm like, you know, terribly satisfied with the way that everything like draws up. However, I will like reiterate and re-underline like the additional mechanics that they bring to it, you know, just in terms of Phoenix has the ability to see psyche locks on people, which is like, okay, in regular conversation, you can catch them in contradictions in order to, you know, present evidence and see, all right, yeah, this actually is the truth about what you're saying. I just needed to understand that you were hiding something so I could show it to you. Apollo, who is the young upstart attorney, he has the ability to find people's tells. And so the way that manifests itself is actually like a zoomed in view, looking at people during their statements in order to see like, oh, he's tapping his thumb here. So he probably is, you know, lying about the thing that he's talking about. And then Athena, who's the newest character, has the ability to, and this is the most robust one, analyze people's emotions as they give testimony. Huh. And so, like, you can see, like, oh, what you're saying here indicated that you probably should have been surprised. And there are, like, four emotions you can pick from, and it shows, like, what the readout is. There's an inconsistency here. Let's press this. They've given you a staggering number of ways in any given, you know, case to crack what people are saying. And like, what's cool about the late cases is that you know, get the choice of how do I want to approach this. And obviously, because it's the kind of game it is, there's a right way to do it. You know, like they're like, the way to proceed is to know to use Athena at this particular part in order to crack this, so you can set them up for an evidence-based kind of thing. So the most interesting thing that's happened to the series gameplay wise Dennis.
Yeah, sorry, I was going to say, can you just kind of choose the wrong person and still succeed?
No, like, it's just kind of like, you know, like you get a little bit more. So I think the thing that made this take a little bit less time was the fact that I was a little bit less dogged about seeing all of the text in previous Phoenix Wright. So I was like, okay, I'm going to press every statement just to see everything that's going to happen. Failure conditions, what they do, aside from the ones that take away your health bar, but of like, if you're just pursuing a blind alley, there's always like an interesting little bit of text that provides some context for you. And pressing everything and doing the wrong thing that is not, you know, presenting evidence or giving the wrong answer to a question that is asked, there's no real harm to it aside from the fact that it takes like a longer time. All of this, though, because they give you these, you know, very, very highly billboarded sets of skills, means that it's a very directed experience, even more so than previously. And they take a lot of the deductive weight off of you as a participant in the story. So it holds true throughout the, you know, through to the end, that they grab hold of your hand and walk you straight through to conclusions, which I can't say if they always did or not, but it feels like a much easier game because of that, for, you know, for like just this go around. Yeah.
But still an enjoyable experience overall, though.
Yeah. It's a visual novel, you know, like I dig the characters for as goofy and anime as they are, you know, like you, in spite of that, I guess. And, you know, I still have fondness for the series, but it's pretty hard to like outright recommend it to somebody who hasn't been in since the beginning, you know?
Sure.
Other than that, kind of continuing on the legal tear, and I won't take us too long here tonight, I've been playing The Devil's Attorney.
Ooh,
which is an iOS game. I don't know if it's Android or not, but I'm playing it on my iPad. And it is like a turn-based kind of card RPG that has a legal theme based around it. I've played this before, and I may have talked about it briefly, but it's, you know, kind of talked up as what the Better Call Saul game would be from Breaking Bad, right? Because, you know, the fiction around this is that you are an unscrupulous lawyer in the 80s, and like there's, you know, somebody who comes in and says, yeah, I was selling a cure-all. And yes, chemical analysis did put it pretty close to being lemonade, but I'm not guilty of fraud, I swear. And so you go into these, you know, courtroom battles, and there's like a little bit of dialogue that sometimes is funny, sometimes misses, whatever. But you know, it's you and these other attorneys, and they have a set of, you know, it's like it's them and their witnesses and their evidence. And they have different attack values that attack kind of your standing in the case, and they have health that is represented as their credibility, and you have different attacks that do different levels of damage to their credibility. And the idea is, like, within a certain number of rounds, you want to finagle the numbers and choose the right attacks to take as many of their pieces off the board as possible before you run out of action points. So it's like, okay, here is a piece of evidence that has, you know, three credibility and the ability to attack me for like 5 damage. Well, that's a really bad thing to have on the board. I can take it away. But also, if I take that out, any experts that are there to testify about that piece of evidence, they go away as well. So it's a matter of prioritizing your targets in such a way that you know, even with the small amount of randomness that is built into this, you know, it's a matter of if I nail that order of operations, I can be out of here and get my extra money, which I can then use to fold back over into upgrades to my apartment that act like a skill tree, right? So there's like materialism, decadence, and vanity. And to use your money to like, oh, this particular, you know, couch that you buy for your apartment boosts one thing. And as you level up in one particular vice, it's you know, it unlocks different abilities that, you know, let you do you know, different things in court in terms of if you're a materialist, you kind of specialize in debunking evidence. And so that's what I kind of went through, right? And so you're building this character out to be effective in different situations, which opens you up for some bonuses and closes some bonuses out. But I've never been in a situation where I've been absolutely fucked by my purchasing decisions.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah, it's neat. I don't know how expensive it is. It's pretty meaty so far as I've seen. And it's a wonderful example of like, if this game was just pure numbers, it would still be really fun. Like, there are any number of themes that this could have taken, but they've gone with the devil's attorney kind of thing. And they have a great theme song in it, too. Just to like, okay, like, this is what's going to make our pretty solid turn-based card game work for us. And yeah, it's like, it works on this really kind of unexpected level.
Nice. I might have to try this out.
What's the name of the game again?
It's called The Devil's Attorney.
And so why is it not called The Devil's Advocate?
I assume trademark or copyright.
The Vatican has a trademark.
Yeah, you don't want to get Al Pacino on your ass. There's bad news all around. It's not good for anybody. Do you guys have any other questions about that one?
No.
Yeah.
Cool.
And I'm going to round out with just kind of a mentioning of the fact that I have played a little bit of Binding of Isaac Rebirth.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to have more to say about this in the coming weeks. All that I can say is it is wonderful to see this game kind of reimagined as a much more kind of coherent technical experience. And some of the changes that I've already seen them make, you know, I can't tell if they're, you know, a lateral step or a step forward, but at least it's a different enough experience that I will say that anybody who has played The Binding of Isaac and who is kind of frustrated that it's a piece of shit that runs in a Flash that doesn't do basic things like game saves or controller support, you're going to be happy with this. And I feel pretty good calling this like, oh, this is the version of this game that I really wanted to play. Recognizing also that The Binding of Isaac is a really, really good game, probably borderline perfect, that they've just managed to re-release in this really solid, stable way that has kind of lent a certain measure of like gravity to the experience, and makes it feel like you're not playing, you know, something made in Flash.
Nice. I haven't gone back to Binding of Isaac since my initial talking about games that we binge. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And I feel terrible. If Steam's interface for this was any better at all, I would be able to say who gifted it to me. But somebody just up and said, hey, I want you to have Binding of Isaac when it comes out. So I'm sorry if I am, you know, received a gift copy of the game from Mike. Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah. And I'll have more to say about it later. I literally just put about a half hour of it in today during the workday. And I don't have much else to say beyond that. So, cool. You guys ready to button it up?
I think that's a wrap.
Yeah, so thank you so much for everybody for tuning in for level number 82. I want to remind you that Duckstream is coming up. That is November the 21st and the 22nd. I've decided that for the first part of my shift here, or the Cincinnati shift, I'm going to be streaming Haunting Ground. Presuming that the copy of the game that I ordered to replace the one that I lost to a girlfriend is
second in, week mentioned.
Not that I'm angry. Really? Did I mention that before?
You made it very clear this week, Cole, that you are angry just in general and in specific.
I mean, not that I'm specific. No. Presuming the copy that I ordered is in working fashion. I've wanted to play back through that game for a while. I sing its praises on a near weekly basis. So, watch that thing get beat. And then a little bit later in the day, we're going to have some stuff happening on our side. That, of course, is a charity event that we're doing on Twitch to benefit Transactive, which is a gender center out of Portland, which provides education and resources to trans children. It is the only charity of its kind that we know of. And it's a pretty good cause, helping these kids out and their families. So pretty excited about that. Yeah, but there's the usual stuff too. Leave us a rating or review on iTunes. I haven't checked our reviews in a while. I'm going to presume there hasn't been one, you know, so go ahead and leave one anyway. That makes us feel good and helps people find the show. And like us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. Did I miss anything, guys?
Ooh, you cut out a bit there at the end.
Oh. Well, it was recorded on my side, I assure you.
The important people heard it.
Yeah, good. Good luck editing this.
Yeah, don't worry. Everything is A-okay. So I've been Cole Ross. I'm at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I'm Dennis Furia at DFuria on Twitter.
I'm David Mysmith at Mysmith777 on Twitter.
I'm Ben Merkel, and I'm at Merkelizer on Twitter.
And until next time, you are very interested in hearing about our second-person shooter. Do you want to hear what my Halloween is? First off, Ben, congratulations on your Halloween costume.
Yeah, you won Halloween, dude. Yeah,
did you like it?
Uh-huh.
I was happy with the amount of props I had.
Yeah, and you nailed the clothing,
what,
too.
What was yours? I guess I missed that.
The only downside is that my hair was not bleached. I went as James from Silent Hill 2. So I had like the coat was pretty on par, and I had jeans and everything and all the wear. But then what was cool is I made a flashlight that was the same as the Silent Hill flashlight. And then on my cell phone, I made an 8-hour mix of silence and static. And so periodically throughout work, it would just play static. And I used the sound bites from the game too. So like every now and then there'd be the one where it was the Easter egg of his wife and it would be like, why did you whatever, you know, no spoilers. But yeah. And then I had like maps that I like soaked in coffee. So they looked old. And like I marked them with a red marker and stuff with like the X and O's and stuff.
Wow, that's great. That did not all come across in the picture. So that sparked a thought. And actually, I was listening to the Resident Evil WAF as well. Mm-hmm. And I realized, so, you know, like in the Silent Hill games, they kind of just, he very tidily marks the maps and kind of checks off the areas and circles points of interest and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Have they ever done a scare in the series where you open up your map and it's just like completely scrawled in gibberish and occult symbols and like, you know, you don't know what's going on until you exit out? Like just as like a random unsettle you.
No, they've done it. Like it's a little bit more subtle than that. Like there have been instances where there is no map, so you start making your own. And in areas where there is no map, the architecture is inherently chaotic to the to the point where like, oh, this actually doesn't make any sense. But they're providing me something in the game that, you know, shows an approximation of that. And so like it's not like a jump scare that goes back to normal the next time, but like, you know, it is a sense of unease as you are, you know, creating this map for yourself.
Yeah. Wait, are we at a point where a map can constitute a jump scare?
Well, it wouldn't be a jump scare, it'd just be super unsettling if, you know, you've come to rely on this guy kind of marking the map for you and he's clearly going through situations where they're losing their mind.
Oh yeah.
You know, why wouldn't that be reflected in the map at least once?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if this will make it into post roll or not, but when we were in Oregon, our good friends Brandon and Miranda, couple of the century, Sorry, Dennis and Jen.
It's all right. It's all right. We're in the running for next year.
Yeah.
besides, we are a three now. So yes, really, couple is not an applicable category.
But Brandon, Ben, yeah. you met them at karaoke, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Miranda was the one with like the short bleach blonde hair. And her boyfriend, I think. But we were at the Lovecraft Bar. For the WAF meetup, and I noticed that Brandon was wearing a the James Sunderland jacket, like the M65 Army surplus thing, and he actually had the patches on. I was like, oh man, that's great, you know, that's a wonderful costume. I said, yeah, Miranda got this for me for my birthday, or it was their anniversary. I was like, yeah. He's like, here, check this out, and he pulled something out of the pocket, and it was a letter.
Mm-hmm.
And he handed it to me, and it was like handwritten out, and it was the note from Silent Hill 2. Yep. And he proceeded to break down in like excruciating detail this scavenger hunt that she created for him, the Silent Hill themed scavenger hunt that took them all around Portland, you know, like to like graveyards and you know stuff like that, and you know in order to like get to his anniversary gift.
Nice.
It's like, oh my gosh, you guys are the best ever. Do you guys want to hear what my Halloween costume was this year?
Yeah.
Yes, please.
I went to a party on Saturday, and fuck if I'm going to do a costume. I don't know if I want to. What can I put together? It's like a work thing. Most of the people know me, so I went as my own evil twin.
Were you just like hyper extroverted the entire time? And
no, I was still mostly me. However, I wore a white t-shirt, a different set of glasses, and an eye patch.
Okay. Can I? Do you have a picture of this?
Nope.
Oh,